Hi, Philip Rolla here. I'm going to record a podcast about pleural effusions today. So I've put up a few posts about pleural effusions, two so far and a third one coming up. The first one really about identifying with bedside ultrasound. The second one about the physiology that applies a little bit. And the third one's going to be really a video on the how-to. So I just wanted to put up a podcast for those who enjoy listening or for whom it's easier to do that than to sit on the web and give a bit of a capsule of all that. So listen, the first part that's the most important is you got to use bedside ultrasound. You got to examine your critically ill patients and includes the patients who show up short of breath in the emerge because you don't know what their pre-existing status is. In terms of the ICU patients, so many of them have had a lot of resuscitation and they're hypoalbuminemic, and even if in their post-resuscitation phase, even if they're not such terrible Michelin men, you'll be surprised how many significant effusions you can find. So it's really key to that lung examination, lung ultrasound, be part of your everyday or almost everyday routine. You know, maybe you might, if it's completely clear, you might not do it necessarily the next day, but really it's part of a routine examination. So yeah, definitely important to scan your patients for it. The way I like to do it is a longitudinal scan. You know, get down as close to the bed as you can because that way you can catch the smaller effusions and just in terms of detecting them. I've already discussed a little bit in the post who should you drain, and I think that's really a MD type of question. I don't think there's a simple answer to it. But the gist of it is the more your patients in respiratory failure, and anywhere from requiring oxygen to being on mechanical ventilation, the more that effusion is significant. If they're walking around on no oxygen and they've got a 1 liter effusion on one side, well, you know what? That may not be an ED or an ICU problem right there and then. That might be something that the respirologist can look after and whatnot if it's known. In terms of the size. Now, in terms of diagnosis, you need to tap these things. At least a 22-gauge needle just to get a sample. You know, that's essentially without complication. You do it under ultrasound guidance. And you get a diagnosis. So, in terms of the actual technique, what are the key elements? There's really only three of them. One of them is where are you going to do it? So you're going to pick a spot based on your ultrasound that you've got at least 1 centimeter of fluid in between the two pleural layers. That way you know that when you go in with your needle and you aspirate fluid, you've got a centimeter of distance between that sharp needle tip and the pleura to avoid causing a pneumothorax. And that's a pretty small effusion, actually. That would be something that you would probably tap for diagnostic purposes as opposed to therapeutic purposes. Otherwise, you essentially pick the spot that's the widest. You've got the most, margin of error area. Of course, just like in traditional, this would be point number two, just like in a traditional thoracentesis, you want to go and slip over the rib. It's useful sometimes to even just hit the rib and then just, pull up a little bit, angle up a tiny little bit and slip right over it. That way you avoid the neurovascular bundle that runs just beneath the rib. And then finally, it's got to do with the position on the chest that you're going to actually put the drain. If you remember draining in, as a resident or student or the traditional, have you doing it sitting up and things like that, that's fine for the ward patients or ambulatory patients. It doesn't really work for the ICU or many of the sick ED patients. You got to do it on the side, because otherwise you're going to end up being on their back completely kinking the catheter. It's just not going to work. So basically, you do it at the lowest point that you've got a good margin. So usually in the lower third of the side. Therefore, you're going to get the most of the dependent fluid. Obviously, if you put it right up, in the mid-axillary or anterior axillary line, and once the effusion level gets below that, it might still drain, but it's going to take longer and it might not drain as well. So, and in any case, the dependent areas where the fluid is going to give you the safest margin of maneuver. So generally, it's behind or below the mid-axillary or posterior-axillary line. So that's really the best spots to do it. Now, what do you use? When I started, and I started doing this because I thought that the traditional chest tubes for a simple, clear fusion really were causing too much pain to the patients and were too much of a difficulty to deal with. You might have to give them morphine, get them more constipated and more drowsy, etc. So I started using central venous catheters. So if you've got nothing else, central venous catheter works pretty well. The only thing it doesn't do that well, because it doesn't have that pigtail twist, is that the tip and the sides can easily abut against the lung or the chest wall, and you don't get as good a drainage or as consistent a drainage as you do by using a pigtail catheter. But you can do it. I've been pretty successful at it. I did at one point do a good search and found a really good catheter. I'm not going to mention by who, because I don't want to be advertising out here. But it's a simple cell drainage technique with a simple pigtail. The difference is that the guide wire has got a little stiffer area, so it can act like a semi-rigid trocar for your insertion of the actual catheter. And these are just fantastic. Use them for pleural effusions, paracentesis, draining ascites, pericardial drains. They're just really fantastic.